This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone and welcome again to another edition of the 55-minute version of Media Network Plus, heard monthly around the world. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be continuing our conversation with Andy Sennett. And also, Paulette's going to be telling us about a very interesting Supreme Court decision concerning cable operators and private broadcasters in Canada.
And in the second half of our program, there will be very little that's serious. We're going to be taking a lighter look at the year.
This is Media Network Plus. Stay tuned, because if you don't, I'll go after you. Now, normally at this point in the program, right at the beginning, either Paulette or myself will say, and now time for so-and-so with a look at some of the headlines in the world of media. We're not doing that on this month's edition of the program, only because we sort of need the extra time for our special look at the lighter side of broadcasting in the second half of the show. And also, I should mention that Dan Hensley is not here this week, but he will be returning on the next show at the end of next month, the first show for 2013, and also on next week's 30-minute edition. So, why don't we just begin right now? As you may or may not know, we did a very lengthy interview with Andy Sennett, who is the former editor of the World Radio TV Handbook and also the editor of the Media Network blog that was at Radio Netherlands Worldwide. When Radio Netherlands was hit with a massive budget cut, Andy decided to retire. And after he retired, we had him on the show, and we recorded a very long interview, and as you know, we've been airing parts of it from time to time. Today, we're going to bring you part three, and it begins by answering the question, how did the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands begin?
Well, we started producing material on the website, once the website got established in the mid-1990s. And once the Media Network radio show ended, Jonathan Marx said to me, well, there's no reason at all to end the web version, because, that's something which hopefully will develop over the years. So I carried on doing web stories and web features. But the reason for the blog was simply in 1993, when the Allies went into Iraq, there was a lot of breaking media news. And at that time, the only way to update it was to go into the office and update it in Hilversum. And I wanted a way to be able to update things from home. So if I heard some interesting media news, I didn't have to take an hour's journey into the office just to type, 5 minutes worth of news online. So it was really a matter of, finding a solution to a particular problem. But what happened was that when the media news from Iraq died down after Saddam was captured and you know, there was less, there was plenty of military news and political news, but less media news. So we decided to expand the media blog to cover media items from the whole world. So that's really when it, you know, how it started. Again, by chance.
You know, I remember in the 1990s listening to Media Network in the early 1990s, and they would give out the website for Radio Netherlands. And it's funny because I was just thinking about this the other day. I would dial up after I heard the show at around 3:30 UTC, and I still remember the frequency. For North America, it was 6020 from Flavoland. They'd give out the email address, the URL for the website, and I'd go to it, dial up with a 28K modem, enter the URL, and it was only text-based. There was no pictures. There was no video. It was just text. And, you know, I'd get a menu. I'd be in, like, the main Radio Netherlands site. It had the Dutch news, and it was just a pain in the backside just to get to the news items that were used on the show that they would upload on the website. I still remember that so vividly.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, one of the weak points at Radio Netherlands over the years has been we've never had a really good website. It's always had a technical problem behind the scenes. You know, it's been slow, or it's been difficult to update, or it's been difficult for people at the other end to actually access. And I think this has been one of the weaknesses. But at least people can't say that we devoted all our energies to the web, because that certainly isn't true.
Yep, remember the old days, way back when your shortwave radio would get so hot. Radio wasn't just for entertainment, it was for cooking the family meal on top.
Hey y'all, it's 10 years since the foundation of Global NDXC Radio, a station with thousands of potential listeners, but unfortunately, no transmitters. Anyway, we're going digital with my DDD system. Dixie Digital Download, the ultimate dump from cyberspace. Now, here's the address to email us. Now, where did I put that address? Gotta be around here somewhere. Maybe it's underneath my stereo shortwave modulator.
Andy, as you know, international broadcasting has changed a lot. Just even in the last year, we've seen a lot of changes take place. Stations like Swiss Radio International are no more. Radio Sweden has left the international broadcasting bands and is now effectively just a Swedish service for Sweden in English, providing programs to immigrants and foreigners living in Sweden. Czech Radio. And Radio Canada International's budget was slashed by 80% not too long ago. Radio Netherlands, is this the future? Is this what you see happening to even the big stations like the Voice of America, BBC World Service, the Voice of Russia that's expanding? Do you see them going the same way?
Not entirely. I think there will always be a need for the big countries to broadcast, you know, what they consider to be their point of view to the world. Obviously, the BBC is financed from its own resources, so it might become more critical of the British government in the future. But what I do see is that the radio stations, like VOA and Voice of Russia, are becoming less important now than satellite TV. And I think there'll be a greater emphasis on television and less emphasis on radio. And, of course, this will vary according to the particular country that they're broadcasting to. Obviously, in some countries, radio still has priority. But in other countries, you know, there's quite a lot of competition already for viewership between different international broadcasters on television. And so I think that's going to be the thing that's going to be noticeable for the next 10 years.
Now, Andy, there is, you know, speaking of these changes taking place, there is one question that I have on my mind, and I know a lot of other people, we've talked about this. I talked about this with some people the other day. Now, Radio Netherlands took a very big cut to the budget. They've also changed their mandate. It's no longer going to be focusing on the Netherlands. That's going to be pushed aside. It's not going to be focusing on providing free media to countries where there is no free media. Now, I have one question, and I don't quite understand this, because Radio Netherlands does have a Chinese website. We've seen the websites, many websites in China, being shut down by the authorities. Radio Canada International has had their website in China blocked for more than 10 years. Now, Radio Netherlands recently left the shortwave bands. How are they going to be targeting these countries if the internet goes down? It's happening all the time. Who is going to access it?
Well, Keith, first of all, I should say that the change in what we do, what was actually the government's, a politician's decision. It wasn't Radio Netherlands' intention to stop carrying Dutch news, and it wasn't Radio Netherlands' intention to stop shortwave completely. This was a result of the government cutting our budget by 70%. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. There is a problem, and the people who are still at Radio Netherlands and are planning, you know, to relaunch the whole organization on the 1st of January next year, when officially the new budget takes effect. They are very much aware of this, and there are still discussions going on about exactly what they're going to do. I think one of the things they may do is do some partnerships with other broadcasters who still have shortwave into China, and possibly have, you know, Radio Netherlands features on other stations. I don't know quite how this would work. I doubt the Voice of America would do it. I doubt the BBC would do it. But maybe some of the other stations, which are still broadcasting in Chinese, it might be interested. But that's just my own personal speculation, and it's certainly not a policy, a fixed policy, as far as I know, at this stage.
So what you're saying is that actually could change, because, you know, about 2 weeks ago, I spoke to a good friend of mine by the name of Manolo de la Rosa. I worked with him at Radio Havana, Cuba. He also worked at Radio Moscow for a number of years. And he's been a regular listener of Radio Netherlands in Spanish for 3 decades. And he said to me, you know, I'm one of the lucky Cubans that have internet here at home. I have internet, but I still can't access the Radio Netherlands website. And he says, now they're gone, but they're saying they're moving everything over to the web in Spanish. But here in Cuba, he said, nobody has access.
Well, there is still a 1 hour a day on shortwave, specifically for Cuba and for a few other countries where we know the press freedom is still an issue. And so there is still a 1 hour broadcast a day in Spanish, but it's produced by a very small team. You know, most of the people who were on the old Spanish service have been made redundant. Indeed, this is a problem. There's no reason why Cubans shouldn't have access to the internet, because the cable between Venezuela and Cuba was installed last year, but it hasn't been activated. And the question is why, and I think we all know the answer to why. But we're still hoping that maybe Raul Castro in due course will become a little more savvy and realize that he's actually doing the country more harm than good by denying people access to the internet.
Media Network, a weekly review of what's happening in the international communications business, hosted by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Now, do you think that over the last 10 years, shortwave has been abandoned too early?
It's probably too early from a listener's point of view. The main reason has been one of budget cuts. Radio Netherlands would have loved to have continued broadcasting in English to Africa on shortwave, for example. But simply, the money, the figures don't add up. And, if the politicians aren't prepared to give the radio stations any money to broadcast on shortwave, we've tried, I was involved in 30 years ago in two projects which depended on listeners sending in money to help pay for the transmissions. And in both cases, we only had a few dozen people actually send any money. So, that doesn't work, listener-sponsored programming. So, what is the answer?
But you say listener-sponsored programming doesn't work. I mean, but what do I like, for example, the United States? They have National Public Radio, they have PBS television, and it's mainly from people, you know, donating money to the stations.
But that's domestic, Keith. I'm talking about international broadcasting. When I was with the WRTH, shortwave listeners are the most stingiest lot of people that you can imagine. They would complain if we put a dollar on the price of the handbook, they would complain it was too much. Yet they'd be quite happy to go and spend several hundred dollars on a receiver to receive the stations. But they weren't prepared to pay an extra dollar to have a book that tells them where the stations are on the dial. And I could never understand that. And the irony was that when eBay came along, I actually saw people on eBay paying two or three times as much for an old copy of the handbook, which didn't really tell them anything because the information was all out of date. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's shortwave listeners for you.
But, you know, Andy, this is the funny thing. Now, if anybody's listening right now and you go to eBay, you can find selling on eBay QSL cards from almost every station out there. And I have seen QSL cards from Radio Netherlands from the 1980s, copies of a magazine that Radio Netherlands had called, I believe it was On Target.
On Target, yes, On Target.
Selling on eBay and sold on eBay for like $30, $40.
Well, these people must have more money than sense because,
Andy, these are the same people that would complain if stations didn't send out freebies, you know?
I know. There was a saying in England, in the north of England, there's not so queer as folk, which means there's nothing so strange as people. And, I think shortwave listening has taught me that.
Well, here, let's get into an issue. It might be a little sensitive, but this is something that Bob Zanotti and I have talked about a number of times on previous programs. It seems that if we take the SWL and DXer community, it's very fragmented. You have the regular SWLs who tune into station content, and they know what they like listening to, and maybe they don't write stations as often as they do. I mean, if I think, you know, for myself, in 30 years, I think I've written to five different stations, only five times in 30 years. There are those out there who write frequently. They'll write with the SINPO code, or as Bob Zanotti called it, complete garbage, useless. He hates the SINPO code. And keep requesting free stuff all the time. And I think you know what I'm referring to, the hardcore DXers. A station like Radio Netherlands, the management at Radio Netherlands, how did they view the DXers? Now, I know, for example, when I was at China Radio International in the correspondence department, they would go livid when they would receive, sometimes in 1 month, three or four letters from the same guy.
Yes, I can imagine.
And it just requesting the same thing over and over. And I remember a meeting with Li Dan, the then Director General of China Radio International, where he said, you know, yes, we have a lot of listeners, but we have certain listeners, he didn't mention any names, but I knew some of them by name, in certain areas, who just listen for the free stuff that we send them. They do not count their, as Bob Zanotti would put it, persona non grata.
Yes, I think all stations have that, and we have them too. I mean, in the last few weeks I was working at Radio Netherlands, there was still a lot of information, a lot of letters coming in from DXers in South Asia, and some of them appeared not to be aware of all the changes that were taking place, and they were still asking us to send out paper products that we sent out 20 years ago. You know, and I guess they get this information from old copies of WRTH, amongst other things. You know, just years after I left the World Radio TV Handbook, I still got the occasional letter or email from people who, you know, assumed I was still there and assumed that everything in the 10-year-old copy that they were looking at was still valid.
Yeah, but you have, you know, DXers, let's say, Andy, in certain other parts of the world that are quite fanatical. And, you know, there seems to be a lot of these discussions going on various different DX blogs. And, you know, with cuts that take place and programming changes that take place, there seem to be so many unhappy people, but they don't seem to understand the reality of what's going on.
No, you're absolutely right, Keith. And what really gets me, and the reason I don't take part in many of these anymore, fortunately, the PCJ Media Forum on Facebook is you know frequented by people who actually do know what's going on and do understand it. But you know, there's too much speculation, and the problem is the speculation is all. You know, the facts are mixed up with the speculation. So it's very difficult now to determine, you know, exactly what is true and what isn't. And I do wish people would, if they don't know something, would just say, I don't know, rather than probably some guesswork, which might be totally wrong. And in many cases, I know it to be totally wrong.
And that was part three of our conversation with Andy Sennett, the former editor of the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands Worldwide. Radio Netherlands, of course, received a massive budget cut earlier on this year, and Andy Sennett decided to retire from Radio Netherlands, and we're going to bring you part four of that conversation in an upcoming program. Well, Paulette McCrory now joins us in the studio to talk about an interesting decision handed down by the Supreme Court of Canada. Basically, they struck down a fee for carriage that would mean cable companies in Canada would have to pay TV stations for their signals. So, Paulette, let me ask you, because this was making news in Canada, what is this decision going to mean for cable operators?
Well, it's going to mean basically the status quo, Keith. Not much is going to change. And this has been the whole argument all along, is cable companies were insisting that if they had to pay this new fee for carriage, that the cost would be passed down to the consumers. And the Supreme Court has argued that the CRTC had no authority to force the cable companies to pay broadcasters.
Okay, but you know, one of the questions that's in my mind right now is, let's say the cable company said, you know what, okay, we're not going to carry that channel. And of course, there are many, many people across Canada that, I mean, it's one of the most popular forms of accessing television programs. Aren't the TV stations afraid that, well, if cable companies say, you know what, you're going to charge me this amount, forget it, I'm not going to carry you. They're going to be losing a whole customer base?
Well, I don't, obviously it didn't, because this has been going on for quite a few years, Keith, and they felt that their programming was indispensable. I don't know. That question really has never come up in the discussion at all.
Was this a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court?
Well, actually, there were four judges, Keith, that did dissent, and they did feel that the Broadcasting Act allowed them the right to do this, to charge distributors for their content. But the Supreme Court, the majority, disagreed, and this was based on an interpretation of the Copyright Act that is currently in place here in Canada.
Now, the United States, of course, is Canada's closest neighbor. What is their system in place?
Well, they actually have a system that the CRTC agreed to implement. And the problem, though, with that is there are often blackouts, because there are these arguments between the cable companies and the content providers, the network. So perhaps that is one of the issues that Canada wants to avoid. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part. At any rate, it all goes back to the Broadcasting Act.
You know, there was something that I remember years ago in Canada. It's definitely the same now. If you had, say, a commercial broadcaster like CTV broadcasting a show from NBC at exactly the same time, cable operators in Canada had to carry the CTV feed on the NBC channel. They couldn't show the American commercials. They had to show the Canadian commercials. But yet in the United States, stations, let's say in Seattle or in Vermont or in cities that border Canada, they don't have to do that.
Well, no, this is a way, I guess, of protecting the industry in Canada. And yes, they have to black out the U.S. commercials, or at least at one time they did, and put the local, the Canadian commercials. Perhaps in the States they have to put local commercials in the areas. I'm not sure how that works, Keith, but certainly that has been the case, that there was a Canadian version of U.S. programs being broadcast on the cable networks.
Now, what are consumers saying about this, and what are the programmers saying about this?
Well, the programmers are saying that there could be a loss of a lot of local programming. For example, TV stations in places like Yorkton, Saskatchewan, which was my old stomping grounds. I remember very well watching TV there. And when there was only one channel, it was quite the to-do when there was a second channel that came in over the air. And places like Timmins, Ontario as well. And other small communities are going to lose their local programming simply because they can't afford to keep them anymore under the current model. Back in the old days, when I was watching CKOS in Yorkton, for example, it was CBC, and the CBC was had all these affiliate stations in smaller areas, but the CBC isn't doing that anymore.
You know, there's something here that I find a little bit mystifying, let's say, on the side of the broadcasters. We saw Canada just quite recently switch from analog to digital television. There's many areas of Canada that are no longer served because of the lower power that you use with digital TV. But in these areas, maybe people would have access to a local cable company. So are they just not worried at all? Let's say that, say the local cable company doesn't want to carry us on cable anymore. They want to put maybe something else. We've just lost maybe 100,000 viewers because people can't even watch us through the old-fashioned system of rabbit ears.
Well, that is mystifying to me as well, Keith. They basically have cut off, they've limited their distribution system. They've downgraded their distribution system and made it inaccessible to more viewers by going digital instead of over the air. And I don't know. I can't answer that question because I'm just as stumped as you are.
You know, because it is kind of...
It doesn't make any sense.
You know, it is kind of odd because if you think about it, I mean, if I look at it from the outside, I see the broadcasters actually getting a pretty good deal. They're getting free distribution to millions of people. And it's the cable companies. I mean, it's not cheap, of course, to distribute. They have to have a whole network set up. They need technicians to have this network set up. You would think that they would be like, oh, this is good for us. We don't have to pay for any type of distribution.
Well, I think that they don't see that as a benefit in the same way that the record labels in the music industry don't understand that either. And I think the whole thing is started out to talking about status quo for the viewers, but it's not status quo for the producers, the content producers. It's a lot more expensive now than it was, say, 50 years ago, or you know, perhaps even 20 years ago to produce the content. And the advertising revenues just aren't there because there's so much more competition now for advertising. When TV started, advertising was essentially quite a new medium. There wasn't internet. There wasn't satellite radio. There wasn't a 500 channel universe in those days. So there's a lot more competition, and the producers of the content are finding it a lot more expensive to produce the content as well. Back in the day, people did content for free, like you and I do, for the most part. And now you've got union wages. So it's very, the whole landscape has changed. And there are going to be changes, I think, on the horizon. Who's going to be producing the content is hard to say. If the private companies stop doing it, I don't know.
You know, it's kind of funny because in some countries where they've tried to pass a similar type of rule where cable companies had to pay TV stations to carry on their network, these stations, many of them actually, the cable companies said, well, you know what? We don't want to pass this cost along to the consumer. So we're going to carry TV stations and content providers that we don't have to pay for. So, you know, tough cookies on you. And what happened was these stations, they saw their viewership go down. They couldn't charge as much for advertising. And they're now in a more difficult financial situation than they were to begin with.
Well, and I can see that happening here, too, because I don't think that there is a lot of foresight, and I don't think there's a whole lot of understanding, even on the part within the industry, much less the viewing public. I mean, the viewing public resents the advertisements. They seem to have this sense of entitlement now that they can get the good programming for free simply because they're used to it. And, you know, I've read some of the comments and some of the articles have been published on the Internet, and some are suggesting that, you know, viewers should be paid for watching ads without understanding that it is those free ads that provide the free content that they enjoy. And if you if you eliminate the advertising, you're going to eliminate your content along with it, because nobody's willing to pay subscriptions except for the cable. And, the cable companies are having problems too, because a lot of people are saying they're getting rid of their cable because it's becoming a lot more expensive. Cable companies have an advantage in that they can bundle in internet along with it. But the whole industry is morphing, Keith. Distribution with the internet has changed everything.
Paying people to watch advertising, that's like paying school children to go to school.
Well, I think that's the level of the understanding. Not to insult, the viewing public, but it is a very complicated industry, and it is all about business. I mean, very few people are willing to go on the radio or TV like you and I and provide service just because we love it. Amateur radios, most of our listeners understand that, especially the DXers in that community. But the average viewer, they come home from work, they're tired, they want to turn on the TV, and they don't want to watch garbage. And unfortunately, a lot of that is free to produce.
But when it comes to commercials, I mean, you can easily say, well, then don't watch it. Go get a drink. Just do something else.
Well, right, but it disrupts the flow of the story, right? I mean, it's like somebody reading a book and reading a book and someone takes it away from you and wants to talk to you for a while, you get a little bit annoyed because, you know, the story's been interrupted. And so, you know, there's that sense of disruption that people don't like. It's interruption marketing. But that's the model that's been used. That has been what's financed. That's what's created the whole entertainment industry, the television and radio industry. And advertisers have been the lifeblood. But there is so much more competition, so many people with the technology, anybody like you and I are able to start up our own radio program. And things are changing. I mean, at first, everyone and their dog and uncle were producing a podcast, but now things are kind of going back, settling down again to more or less where they were before. The big players have moved on into the market, and they remain big because they have the deep pockets to provide the good content, and that's what people want. But I think that there's a shakedown going on, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
It certainly will be interesting, Paulette, to see what's going to happen with that. Anyway, thank you very much. That was our own Paulette McCrory, and Paulette will be back here in just under 3 minutes for our lighter look at broadcasting. Before we get to our next segment, I just want to tell you about a special program from PCJ Radio, which is taking place on January 1st, 2013, between 2 and 6 hours UTC. And that is going to be a special 4-hour live edition of the Happy Station Show. For those listening on the East Coast of North America, that is December 31st, 2012, 9 p.m., right until January 1st, 2013, at 1 a.m. So the UTC time is 2 to 6 hours UTC, January 1st, 2013, in UTC time, and the frequency will be 9,955 kilohertz. If you're outside this area, because this show you're listening to right now, Media Network Plus, does air to other areas and through partner stations, you can also listen to it through the PCJ website at www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll find a link on the right part of the menu that says Listen Live, and the audio feed will be opened up about 30 minutes before 2 hours UTC. So from 2 hours to 6 hours UTC, January 1st, 2013, a special 4-hour live edition of Happy Station to welcome in the new year for listeners in the Americas. You're listening to Media Network Plus, the monthly 55-minute edition from PCJ Radio International. And this is Media Network Plus, the final show for 2013.
What? 2012.
Oh, yes, it is 2012. Well, actually, you know, Paulette, yes, it is 2012. I'll admit, I've started a little bit too early on the champagne.
You drink champagne?
I always drink champagne when I do the show, don't you?
Well, that's not the question.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. You're like a wine person. Yeah.
Ha, 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 ha. Yes, yes. But hey, listen, Keith, it is after December 21st. So maybe, like, are you on this, the rollover of the Mayan calendar? That's the thing now. They're saying that, well, it didn't really say the world was going to end. It's just the calendar is going to roll over like an odometer.
Okay. That reminds me of Harold Camping. The world is going to end this date. And then he comes back and says, oh, I made a mistake. It's been moved to 3 weeks ahead because of the unions. And
yes, okay.
As you can tell.
Here we are, unless this is really is heaven and we didn't notice the transition. I don't know, Keith.
Well, you're in heaven, but I think I'm the one in hell.
Oh, well, maybe. And that's why we're doing this show in two different places.
Exactly. Anyway, as you can tell, this week's Media Network Plus, of course, is going to be a little bit silly because it is the last show of this year. And by the way, coming up very soon, is going to be the anniversary of, I'm not going to tell you how many shows, but we will tell you in the new year. Anyway, in the new year, one of the guests that we're going to have on the program is Paul Henry. Now, Paulette, I recently told you about Paul Henry.
Yes, you did. He sounds, if it's possible, crazier than you.
Well, put it this way. We already recorded the interview. And I think after all the laughing in the interview itself was only 5 minutes.
Then how long was the laughing?
Over 2 hours.
he
is a very, very funny man. And I have to be honest, I think he's one of the most, a lot of people sometimes mistake the things that he says, which he even finds more funny. He became known internationally after he didn't mispronounce her name. He actually used the correct pronunciation. She was the chief minister in charge of the Commonwealth Games, and her name is actually pronounced, and I'm not going to make fun of it here because then it will get too silly. Her name is Sheila Dixit. That is actually the pronunciation of her name. But Television New Zealand, where he was working at the time, were pronouncing it Sheila Dixit. And one of the other TV channels in New Zealand went to Miss Sheila and said, how do you pronounce your name? And she pronounced it Sheila Dixit. Anyway, Paul Henry is wacky, so you can imagine what he would do with that name. And it became an international incident. But nevertheless, he continued to still be Paul Henry. Now, to give you a little idea of what Paul Henry is like, especially for listeners outside Australia, New Zealand, and also the UK, because some people there are familiar with him. Here he is talking about a product, Paulette, which, whoever invented this has got to be a loon. It's called a Teasmade. You know what that is?
Well, actually, yes, I do know.
But of course, there are some people out there, Paulette, who have no idea what a Teasmade is. Basically, well, let's see if you can understand what it is from what Paul Henry has to say.
And one of the things they always had on the conveyor belt for the Generation Game, and this is how old it was, do you remember Corin the Teasmaids?
No, I vaguely remember the Generation Game as a kid watching it at my grandparents, but not in detail.
They always had Teasmaid,
which is like an automatic coffee maker.
It's got a clock on it, right? And it wakes you up at whatever time you want to be woken up. But it's just an alarm clock, but it's attached to an entire kitchen unit. And the idea is it wakes you up by going ba-ding-ga-ding-ga-ding-ga-ding-ga-ding, and you go over and you whack it and grab your cup of tea and drink it. But what happens? Normally you wake up when scalding water is tipped all over your head, or the Teasmaid explodes, or you go to turn the alarm off, your hand goes straight into the cup of boiling water. They were the devil's invention, Teasmaids. If you bought a really expensive one, sometimes they worked, but it was so funny, and people would wake up early just to look at the bloody thing at the side of the bed. What the hell is it doing now? Steam coming out the side. They were absolute right.
You have an extraordinary ability to make comedy out of absolutely nothing.
Kate tells Teasmaids, bits of plastic would fall off. The lid would, you'd wake up and you'd think, where the hell is my cup of tea? And the lid would be on the other side of the bedroom, and there'd be a huge explosion in the night. All right, over to you, Ellie.
No!
The Kaytel tea's made.
And that, of course, was Paul Henry talking about the tea's made. He's going to be a guest on our show, and he's the kind of guy, Paulette, I mean, as you probably heard from this second clip that we had, he can take something as funny, well, I mean, it's not really that funny, somebody kidnaps a penguin. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's funny or not, it's hard to say. And he had to say something, I think, very insightful about that.
Well, three men have been charged with stealing a penguin from SeaWorld on the Gold Coast. The fairy penguin. This is not funny. Named Dirk, similar to this one, he is expected to be back on show this morning after it was found out last night, exhausted but unharmed. The thieves allegedly posted photos of him on Facebook, silly thieves, after taking him on Saturday night. One of their friends dobbed them in to police.
Three men to steal one penguin! It must have been a government job! Wasn't it? How many men does it take to steal one penguin? Three! They're all members of parliament!
I don't know how I'm meant to go on, but I will try.
There you go. Three people to steal a penguin, and he says they were all government workers.
Now that's not hard to believe.
Actually, you know how many people... I just thought of a joke, actually. Guess how many civil servants it takes to steal a penguin? Any ideas? Actually takes six.
Six.
You know why?
No.
Three of them are government employees, the other three are union.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Let's move on now, Paulette, to our next batch that concerns... one of the most credible international news organizations in the world. And who's that?
That has to be the BBC.
Yes, it has to be the BBC. The acronym BBC, by the way, can stand for many different things. Unfortunately, we can't use any of them on the air.
Well, okay. They do have their moments, don't they?
Good evening. If the autocue was working, I could now read you something. But as it isn't, I can't.
With the latest on the Labour MP thrown out of Parliament after filling her erection expenses. Did I say erection? I didn't.
Business news for the moment. Riz.
Thank you very much, Rob. I'm back with a look at the headlines after a look at the weather with Rob McKell. Well, we
offer autonomy to the French. National Assembly has adopted, must approve the measures before a constitutional review. I'm sorry, this story is absolute nonsense. I'll continue with some headlines for you.
Now, the number of people injured in tea cosy related accidents has soared. 37 people hurt themselves using a teapot warmer. In 1999, that's compared with just 20% the previous year. Perhaps most alarming, though, is the figure that reveals that bean bags are four times as dangerous as meat cleavers. 1,317 accidents. That's an increase of 38% on the year before. Department of Trade and Industry study also showed a jump in trouser-related injuries, up almost 16% to 5,945 there. Victims included a 29-year-old woman who burned herself while ironing trousers she was still wearing.
Pigeons in Nottingham are in need of protection from a very expensive artwork. A giant mirror that reflects the sky is to be unveiled in the centre of Nottingham later today. The mirror was apparently capable of focusing the sun's rays and roasting any unfortunate birds that happened to be flying past.
Yes, well, the BBC do have their moments, credible or not. Did you hear the one about Guy Goma?
Well, the Guy Goma one is a classic. Imagine that. You know, Paulette, you call up, you know, because you do Nash Hollis, and you call up the, you know, somebody in Ukraine as an expert on something, but they happen to be just the receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out after the fact, you interview them, and it's gone on air. But they probably did a better job than the expert you wanted to call up anyway.
Sometimes that happens. As happened in the Guy Goma incident.
for the industry and the growth of music online. Well, Guy Cuny is the editor of the technology website News Wireless. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Were you surprised by this verdict today?
I'm very surprised to see this verdict to come on me, because I was not expecting that. When I came, they told me something else, and I'm coming. You got an interview there, so it's a big surprise anyway.
A big surprise.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah. With regards to the cost that's involved, do you think now more people will be downloading online?
Actually, if you can go everywhere, you're gonna see a lot of people downloading to the internet and the website, everything they want. But I think it's much better for the development and to improve people what they want and to get on the easy way and so fast the things they're looking for.
This does really seem to be the way the music industry is progressing now, that people want to go onto the website and download music.
Exactly. You can go everywhere on the cybercafe and you can check. You can go easy. It's going to be very easy way for everyone to get something to the internet.
Thank you, Nee. Thanks very much indeed. I think we can now also speak to...
And that was Guy Goma, who was a virtual unknown in the UK, and basically he went by Television Centre of the BBC for a job interview, and I read the story about actually how it happened. One of the production people went to the lobby where he was and said, "Are you Guy?" Because the person they were going to have on the show, his name was also Guy. Guy Goma said yes. They rushed him off, put makeup on him, put him in front of the camera, and... I mean, this happened in television, and to see the reaction on his face when the news anchor says, "Oh, he's a leading expert in something," the reaction was just funny. And you can tell there he pulled it off pretty well.
Isn't that amazing? Talk about being able to think on your feet.
Well, here,
or
here.
Your seat.
Let's pretend to do it right now. You ask me a question about a subject that you think I know nothing about.
Oh, that's not fair. That's really turning the tables. Okay, Keith. What would you know nothing about? I don't know if there's a subject that you do know nothing about.
What about that?
About nothing?
Yes.
Do you know anything about nothing?
Well, exactly. I mean, all you have to say is, well, the basic fundamentals are we take the situation, we have to examine it, we have to organize a subcommittee, and then we look at the basic fundamentals of this subcommittee concerning budgets and manpower requests, and then we will have a good idea of our fundamental goals for the following year.
You actually did it. Am I not surprised? Very good.
One time, a number of years ago, I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, a former minister of communications for Australia, and he wasn't a very diplomatic person at all, and he used to say what was on his mind. So he went to this conference, and they said, "Oh, write something down." And he's like, "Well, I'm not going to write this." So he wrote something that had a lot of basic fundamentally, and it really said nothing. And he did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, at the press conference that was held after his speech, they said, "Can you explain, what you were talking about?" And he said, "How the hell should I know?" They said they just wanted me to sound like I was an expert on something.
I think I could do that job.
Yes. Some
nice
of the other...
Nice work if you can get it, eh?
Sorry?
Nice work if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it, yeah. You are listening to Media Network Plus. And for the most part, Poet, I think that we do... most of our shows are maybe not, I mean, they're not like dread-wrenching serious. But, you know, we do things, of, you know, in a normal kind of way. But every so often... Actually, no, I don't think it's ever happened. I think this is the first time. There's one story, I think we revisited the story three times within one month. Do you know what that is?
Do we? Oh gosh. That wouldn't be the Bruno Barth story.
Bruno Barth, or whoever he is, a while ago, just to recap here, we'd received an email and a number of other people about Radio Berlin International coming back. And if those who are not familiar with it, that was the international voice of the German Democratic Republic, or East Germany. Anyway, this was a story that just got stranger and stranger and stranger. Now, let's take a little listen right now to a clip from when we had Bruno Barth first on the show.
The money is only privately. Mm-hmm. The people we have phoned RBI in this year, we have created an association. And this association, the name is Center of Radio and Energy Technologies Known. And we give our privately money in this association. And in step two, we can have money from the government, or we can we will be donate from privately organizations, or from other privately people.
Okay, and so that was Bruno Barth trying to explain the return of Radio Berlin International.
And you think? I don't know either. I don't even think he knows. But do you remember, Paulette, the conversation that we had when we did a follow-up on the story?
Oh, gosh, that was funny.
Because this would be like, I call a Paulette, or Paulette calls me, and all of a sudden, we no longer exist, and it's somebody else.
But it sounds just like me.
But it sounds just like me.
But it's not me. Honest, it's not me. I'm somebody else.
Well, you know what's funny, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you check out Wikipedia, this story, I mean, this is just a weird story. This story that we did concerning Radio Berlin International is actually on Wikipedia.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Just do a search in Wikipedia for Radio Berlin International, and then somebody there, I don't know who it is, but they put information on the story that we were following on about this whole thing.
And they quoted our story?
And they quoted Media Network Plus, they quoted quoted me.
That is too funny. I'll have to check that out.
You really have to check it out, because you know what? Imagine that. You know, we heard some other funny developments over course of time. If you check out the website, you'll hear the show from that date. I'll put it up on our website and our Facebook, so you'll know what I'm talking about. But I decided to call this Bruno Barth guy back after he didn't return any emails and everything. And this is what happened.
Ja, bitte?
Yes, hello. I wish to speak to Mr. Bruno Barth.
Oh, sorry, please. Here's the Center of Radio and Energy Technologies from the historical radio station Nauen. My name is René Schulze. I know RBI, Radio Berlin International, is a partner of us. RBI have found the association.
So this is not Bruno Barth who I'm speaking to then.
Bruno Barth was the founder of Radio Berlin International, and his work is closed. Radio Berlin International is a new part of the association Center of Radio and Energy Technologies, Nauen. That's the big transmitter station. Nauen is the big transmitter station where RBI was in the historical, has transmitted his program, and in the future will be RBI transmit a new program over shortwave. And Bruno Barth was the founder. Bruno Barth is an old, very old man from RBI, and his last work was the founding of an association with the name Center of Radio and Energy Technologies Nauen.
Okay, then. Well, thank you very much. There you go, Paulette. I love where he says, oh, yes, Mr. Barth. My name is not Bruno, it's Renee.
Well, what about the address? I mean, isn't that the funniest thing?
The address was, the address belongs to some poor woman in Berlin that they just gave out, and she's getting all these, like, these funny letters and everything.
I'm sorry, I can't stop a minute. It's the funniest. Can you imagine? Oh, gosh. Yes, that was quite the story.
some of the strange things that happen.
We do have our fun, don't we?
Anyway, moving on to something else, actually, to end off today's show. And that is some of the funny moments from this program. Are you ready?
I'm never ready, Keith.
So get on your polka shoes. Do you have polka shoes?
Polka shoes, dancing boots. Yes, absolutely. They're even red.
Oh, you're one of those people that line dance with a mullet, right?
I do that too.
Anyway, here is some of the outtakes from our own program, Media Network Plus. We received an email last week from Roger Tidy in London in the UK. Roger, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. It is Tidy, not Titty, right? That's a whole other thing. Well, I mean, we have to be...
Keith!
Okay, sorry.
You don't mess with somebody's name, okay? No. Blooper!
Oh.
This is a blooper. Like, this is a blooper for, like, you know, not for the public.
Okay, let me take this again.
So Rich, yes, Richard.
let me take this. Roger, let me take this again.
Roger, okay. Roger.
He's rogering today.
How does a person not encourage you?
Okay.
It's impossible.
Okay, let me take that line again. Stop it, I'll never get through it, you know. Let me have some water, that will help. Okay. Well, Paulette, I have an email here that we got from Roger. Oh, bollocks. Okay. I'm not laughing at the guy's name. I'm just, my own strangeness here is going out of control. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that the signal was solid, the audio was appropriate, and that it wasn't too loud and it wasn't too...
Okay, Dan, wait till... What is that, a train?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll take that question again. Okay, let me take that question again.
Okay.
You just started disappearing. okay.
Yes, I have, and the transmitted audio reports on my end that I've received have said that the audio is not too hot and it's not too low. So everybody's saying it's just perfect.
Now, in your area, what are the bands that you need to... Oh,
another train.
Yes, I can hear the train.
You're going to hear these things every 3 to 5 minutes.
It's okay. I'll just keep the answers between 3 to 5 minutes.
First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
A man today in South Africa was wearing a brassiere on his head. He thought they were headphones. In Zimbabwe today, Robert Mugabe went out in Harare dressed in drag. And former President George Bush meets a hooker from Thailand.
For those who've been listening to this program for some time...
Okay. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're listening to... And by the way, if you're...
Do you want me just to go in there?
No, that's okay. It's okay.
Media Network Plus.
And by the way, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, the monthly 55-minute edition. Now, just pretend for a moment that you have a Well, you can call it a time. Wait a second. The dogs are barking. Somebody's at the door. Wait a minute. Keep rolling. Don't stop it.
Okay.
Keep rolling.
Well, Keith, I can't believe some of the things that you keep on tape.
You're going to find this funny, but I have over 60 minutes of outtakes from this program.
Oh, my goodness.
So you better watch yourself.
I better be good. You're the evil Santa, aren't you?
So on behalf of myself, Keith Perron in Taipei, Taiwan.
Paulette McCrory from Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and see you soon.
73s to you all and 88s to the ladies.